So I think I started med school wanting to be a neurologist. That's what I recall. And it quickly became apparent to me that neurologists were really good at diagnosing things, but I wasn't exposed to any kind of formal treatment. Maybe I didn't really see a lot of MS patients or migraine, or couldn't figure out what neurologists actually do other than saying, you know, you have a lesion of the third nerve as it passes through that frame and whatever. What can you do for me? I don't know. I'll send you to the neurosurgeon. So I felt that neurology was good at diagnosing, but I wasn't sure I was going to get enough therapy from that. But I didn't want to do neurosurgery because I thought that was a pretty long training program and very focused and wasn't for me. So then I wanted to be an internist. I think I wanted to be an endocrinologist. In Med 2, I set up an elective in Toronto. I was at McGill. I wanted to get out of Quebec. So I set up an elective in Toronto in endocrinology and had the time of my life. Thought endocrinology was the absolute best thing. Loved thyroid disease and diabetes, and I thought this was something amazing that I could do. And then I even loved morning report, you know, where they discussed the cases from the night before, and it was very confrontational. The staff would ask questions, and the residents had to be on their feet. And I admired the knowledge base of the internist. So I set up my... I had already set up... Where are we? Okay, so Med 2, I had set up the elective in endocrinology, but then during my pre-clerkship in surgery, I really enjoyed surgery. I had already set up the endocrinology elective. I wasn't going to cancel it, but I really liked surgery during pre-clerkship. And I loved scrubbing in. I thought it was the coolest thing, scrub and the glove and the gown and the not touching anything. And I loved assisting, and I thought I wanted to be a surgeon. So I set up my clerkship schedule such that I would do obs-gyn first, get to know how to manage surgical patients, and then I would do surgery second, so I would impress the surgeons. I would already know how to manage surgical patients, so I would impress the surgeons and get into a surgical residency. So I went off to Toronto that summer, did endocrinology, loved it, changed my mind, wants to do internal medicine. Came back, did my obs-gyn rotation, thinking I was going to be an internist, and loved obs-gyn. But I thought that I loved obs-gyn because it was my first clerkship and I wasn't burnt out. Because there was 6 students on my rotation, and we only had room for 5, so somebody had to be pre-call and somebody had to be post-call. So I was having my pre-call days off, my post-call days off. I would go in there, deliver babies. I had tons of time to read. I thought the knowledge base of obs-gyn was really like finite and very manageable. So I decided I was really enjoying obs-gyn. I didn't think that obs-gyn was for men, but I was really enjoying myself. But I thought there was all these other factors of why I was enjoying myself. Then I went to surgery, and I went to surgery thinking I wanted to be an internist, and boy, was that a mistake. The surgeons treated me like garbage. This old boys club at the Montreal General Hospital and the residents, as soon as I said I want to do internal medicine, they just wrote me off and weren't interested in really teaching me anything. They made me feel pretty badly about myself. I did plastic surgery and trauma. There was one trauma surgeon who was nice to me, but other than that, plastics, they treated me like garbage. And I learned very quickly not to tell people what specialty I wanted to do when I was on a different clerkship. And I see medical students doing that to me all the time. I'll say to them, so, what do you think about doing? And, oh, well, I haven't ruled out obs-gyn. Like, yeah, whatever. I know how the game works. It's fine. So did general surgery. Didn't like how the surgeons treated me, how they treated the residents. Then I went to psychiatry. Wasn't interested in that. Then I went to internal. So I start internal thinking I want to do internal. And I realized that I like endocrinology, but I don't like the bread and butter of internal medicine. I didn't like the CHF, COPD, constantly admitting people and bringing them back to baseline, but not actually fixing anybody. And endocrinology for me was almost like being a judge. I think I would like being a judge. I think that's a great job. But I don't think I want to be a lawyer first. I don't think I want to go to law school, become a lawyer, and then become a judge. I could be an endocrinologist, but I don't think I want to be an internist first. And then I don't think I could do internal medicine kind of wards and core internal medicine to get to being an endocrinologist. then my roommates kept on saying to me, but Glenn, the only time you were happy the whole year is when you're doing obscuring. So of course it was happy. I wasn't chronically fatigued, and obscuring is so easy. They're like, well, not everybody enjoys it, and you really enjoyed it. So, well, it's not for guys. He said, well, you know, we just want you to know that the only time that you were, like, pleasant to be around this whole year is when you were doing obscuring. So I ended up calling Toronto and switching my internal medicine elective for the following summer. So the summer after Med 3, I switched it from internal medicine to high-risk obstetrics in Toronto. And I never regretted a single day since then. I went to Toronto, did that elective in high-risk OB, and had the best time. Like, I woke up in the morning, what I call the alarm clock test. When the alarm clock goes off in the morning, you have to be able to look at yourself in the mirror, you have to be able to get out of bed and go to work. And when I was on internal medicine, I wanted to kill myself. And when I was on, even as a PGY-1 on internal medicine, when I knew I was on Friday-Sunday call, I remember I was living on Lee's, I remember the whole scene. I woke up that Friday morning, I looked at myself in the mirror, and I was like, I should have started myself on antidepressants 2 weeks ago, so they'd be kicking in, because I can't believe I'm on Friday-Sunday call on internal medicine. Like, where did it all go wrong? So I switched that elective. I showed up in Toronto. The second day of my rotation, we were doing a C-section for triplets. And it was just amazing. They let me close the skin and never looked back. So totally loved that rotation. And I actually, at one point, I was in my scrubs, and I went out onto Yonge Street and bought myself a pair of Birkenstock clogs, rubber clogs. As soon as I decided I was going to be a surgeon, I bought myself rubber clogs that to this day I still have them. They're in my locker at Riverside. And I actually walked by a call schedule on the internal medicine department, and I saw my name on the call schedule because I had changed my elective so close that I actually was listed on the team on call. And I saw, it was almost like Alice in Wonderland, like through the looking glass. I could see like this alternate life where I was on call, you know, with my team and, like, six people on call every night. And I just imagined myself at morning report being grilled. And I was in my scrubs, and I was, like, all schlumpy. And I was so excited that I had made that decision. I was so happy. So then I was successful in escaping Quebec. I matched to Ottawa. And residency was tough, but I always loved it. And you have to know your personality, too. I can work for 24 hours straight, but I can't work for 36 hours on and off. So I was much happier on obscuring and call, where we work for 24 hours and then sign over the case room and go home and never see my bed, than when I was on general surgery and we'd be expected to stay till noon or even later. I remember begging residents when I was a medical student, please, I'm not contributing in any way to this team. Please, it's 7 o'clock at night, so let me go home. I was on call last night. And there's just a different mentality between general surgery and obscuring, where, you know, general surgery is very, you know, if you don't stay post-call, if you don't kind of take your licks, then there's something wrong with you. And you're not, you know, that culture. I mean, things might change by the time you guys get out there and with work hour restrictions. But the mentality is still, if you're on one and two call, you're missing half the good cases. And in gynecology, we don't have that attitude. So residency was tough, but again, alarm clock test and the Friday-Sunday call. Of course, it's not exciting. It's, you know, Sunday morning on a Friday-Sunday call at 3 in the morning when you're exhausted, or 4 in the morning you're exhausted, to be looking at a bad fetal heart rate tracing and have to do, like, your sixth section of 24-hour period. But you still have to be able to come back Tuesday morning and enjoy what you're doing. And this is the only, thank God I found a specialty that I enjoy, because I really didn't enjoy almost anything else. And it's funny, because obscuring is something people either hate or love. My friends make all kinds of faces when I tell them stories about my day, and I can't believe you went into obscuring, and it's, you know, one of my friends, I have his face on my iPhone when he calls, is his impression of what he would look like if he was a gynecologist. And he was like, he's like this. he's a cardiac anesthetist at the Heart Institute. He's like, I would walk around all day. So, thank God there's something for everyone in medicine. So that's how I ended up in Obstetrics. I made peace with the whole male in Obstetrics thing by saying I was going to be a subspecialist. Because nobody wants to go see a guy for their like regular pap test, but, well, that was what I was thinking, or regular pregnancy, but once you have a problem, then you don't really care who you're referred to. So that's how I justified it. Then I got here, and half the generalists in town are men, and I had good role models, and I loved doing general obstetrics, because I can go from doing an easy delivery for a multip to run downstairs to see somebody with a ruptured ectopic and rush them to the OR, do a laparoscopy. You know, today I can be doing colposcopy. Tomorrow I'm in the OR doing hysterectomies. Wednesday I'm on call doing deliveries. So I do everything. And there's a few things that if you're looking for a rush, to do a emergency cesarean section on a young, healthy, thin woman where you can get the baby out in less than a minute is just a thing of beauty. And my friends who are non-physicians think that's like this morbid, gross statement, but there's nothing better than an ectopic that you rush down the hall and put in a scope and basically save their life. Or a crash section where you can make the decision to do a C-section, throw them into the operating room, splash iodine on the abdomen, and have the baby out in a minute from skin to baby, less than a minute. Those are like the things that make you feel alive. So, no, I'm not a trauma surgeon. That's cool too. But I found my... I didn't want to be a general surgeon because I liked all kinds of problems. I didn't want surgery to be my only tool. You can have a woman with heavy bleeding. We have pills, then we have an IUD, and then you have ablation, and then you have surgery, and you have all kinds of options that you go through the steps versus, everything being surgical. I don't live to be in the operating room, but I wanted it to be part of my life. So I have two OR days a month, one day at the Riverside doing minor cases, one day at the General doing major cases. And apart from that, when I'm on call, I end up in the OR most of the time. So now that's another 2.5 days a month. So I'm in the OR probably 4 or 5 days a month, which is exactly fits my personality. I didn't want to live to be in the OR, but I didn't. When I... the year of the ice storm is when I was a clerk. So this is 1990, like January 98. And I went to the OR to show off for a girl. And she said it was, I told her I was on trauma surgery right now. She said, oh, that sounds great. I'd love to see an OR one day. So I asked for permission to bring her to the OR. So she comes to the OR, and because I wasn't on that day, I think I was post-call, I was free. Like, I didn't have to be in clinic. I didn't have to work up pre-op patients, post-op patients. So they asked the plastics team, my old plastics team that had driven me crazy, asked me to scrub in. And I scrubbed in with them. And I remember while I was scrubbing thinking, this is the last time I will ever scrub in for my rest of my life because I'm going to be an internist. This is the last time I'm ever scrubbing in, putting on the gown, And I should have known that I wasn't going to be happy in my career without ever having that feeling again. Same thing with delivering a baby. I remember staying post-call the day before the exam to deliver more babies because I was never going to deliver another baby for the rest of my life, and I felt bad about that. So I stayed post-call the day before the exam to deliver more babies, and I should have known that that was a sign that I should deliver more babies. So... like I said, the residency is tough. It's tough to watch a bad tracing all overnight. It's tough to have to be an obstetrician if you want to be a gynecologist. That's another issue we can discuss, because gynecology is about surgery and obstetrics is about the babies. And to be a good you don't have to be a good obstetrician to be a good gynecologist, but you have to be a good gynecology surgeon to be a good obstetrician. Because you need to have to get yourself out of trouble in the OR. You don't want to be an obstetrician who's always calling for help. You can't do a hysterectomy yourself. You can't manage this complicated C-section. You have to call a gynae surgeon to come help you out. So I like obstetrics a bit more than the gynecology, but I can't give up gynecology because it would compromise my skills as an obstetrician. So,
I don't know if you just want to continue along the timeline that you're going to talk about how...
Carnes?
What was required getting into your program of Najee?
Well, so now we're... So it's 1999, and male applications to OBSGYN have already gone down significantly. I'm a somewhat mature, somewhat reasonably intelligent man, so I knew I was going to get in somewhere. It was just a matter of where. I wanted to go to Toronto. I wanted Ottawa second. And then McGill was my third choice because the program director had delivered me. So I thought I had a pretty good shot of getting into McGill. So I knew I was going to get into I knew I was going to get in somewhere. I'm not that bright, but I'm a hardworking guy, and I am a bit of a perfectionist. So I knew I impressed enough people on electives that I would get in somewhere. I was so happy I got into Ottawa because I killed myself in Toronto but didn't get in there. And I wouldn't have been happy, I think, staying in McGill because I just would have been a bit of a failure because of the whole Quebec thing. And McGill's program at the time wasn't very good. But I wanted to be near home. My whole family's there. I was dating my now wife. It would have been long distance. So I wanted to be there. I wanted to be... McGill was the last place I was willing to end up. So I think the more important question is, what are we looking for now? I think what I'm looking for is somebody with reasonable insight into their limitations, who's a good team player, who conveys at an interview that they have some kind of support system in Ottawa that's going to get them through those tough years, that when you have a bad outcome, that you have somebody to vent to, when you have a bad night where you never see your bed, that you have somebody to talk to, that you have some kind of support system in Ottawa. So when I ask questions at the interviews, it's about being a team player. It's about support system. It's about looking like you're going to fit in with my group of residents. Yeah.
So no research.
Hmm? Sorry. Research to me just makes you seem like you're dedicated to the specialty. We're not looking necessarily for an academic gynecologist like a Toronto might be as much looking for academia. I look at it. I want somebody who's dedicated to OBSGYN, who's given some thought, who shows me some proof that they're not using OBSGYN as some backup to something else. And it's not even as bad as it used to be from my point of view. I'll take a chance on somebody now, as we have so many people in our residency program now that it's not the end of the world if I lose one. We went through a time when it was tight. The service component was so significant that we didn't want to take chances on people who we weren't sure were devoted to OBSGYN because we couldn't risk them leaving and going to another specialty. Now it doesn't bother me that much. Somebody leaves to go to another specialty. I think this. You have a question?
I have a question. What's your opinion on family doctors who do obstetrics and how they've been into
We need family doctors who do obstetrics for sure. We know that moving forward in Canada, there's going to be fewer and fewer people doing OB. So we need family docs to do it. The family docs, if I was a family doc doing OB, I would get in a group because you don't want to have the lifestyle of an obstetrician and the salary of a family physician. There has to be, I'm being paid to have, given up my life to a certain extent. So it's family docs who are in groups, I think, function really nicely. I don't know how they do it. The family docs who come in for all their patients.
What's structure of the Oppsgeimer family in your five
years? Yeah. So first year in Ottawa is 5 years on 5 months on service, and then stuff that is going to make you a better physician, little ICU, little eMERGE, little internal infectious disease, selective, and elective. PGY2 and half of PGY3 are core obs-gyn. That's where you really become an obstetrician gynecologist. By the end of PGY2, you should be able to do a C-section, an easy C-section yourself. You should be able to do a vacuum delivery. You should be able to manage the case room by the end of PGY2. PGY3, you consolidate those skills and you start doing some subspecialties. PGY4 is the subspecialties, gyne-oncology, maternal fetal medicine, urogynecology, and infertility, if I didn't say that. And then start your chief residency, where you're operating every day, making all the decisions. And half of PGY5 is chief, and the rest is kind of studying and doing electives. Infertility is a 2-year fellowship after residency. Most of them are 2 years. MFM's 2 years, gyne-onc's 2 years, urogyne 1 or 2 years. Now people are doing minimally invasive surgery fellowships for 1 year. A little bit of extra training, doing total laparoscopic hysterectomies and more complicated laparoscopy surgery. And it's becoming more of a divide between obstetrics and gynecology as we get more specialized. Of course, the Ottawa Hospital is, you know, tertiary care, quaternary care. It's not the same thing that's happening in a small town where the OBGYN, generalist OBGYN is doing everything still. At the Ottawa Hospital, you got people who are choosing not to do obstetrics, people who are choosing not to do gynecology, just devoting themselves to one or the other. I haven't made that decision yet. I worked at the Montfort for 5 years, so I was in a community hospital for 5 years. So I like that model. I like doing everything still. So, but there's a lot of people stopping doing obstetrics, stopping doing gynae. Yeah?
Can you elaborate on what you dislike about the specialty?
What do I dislike about the specialty? It's mentally grueling to, like, watch a bad tracing overnight. Sometimes I'll come home and my wife will say to me, did you deliver any babies last night? No. Oh, so you had a good night? No. I watched somebody's tracing like a movie, is what I would say. Like, you're literally sitting in front of a tracing, like, with a bag of popcorn, watching this tracing all night, thinking, you know, should I do a section? Should I not? Just wait a little longer. So it could be mentally exhausting. If you do everything you do your best and you still have a bad outcome, that wears on you after a while. It's, you know, people say it's the highest highs, the lowest lows. Like, who wants to, you know, you do your best and you have a bad outcome with a baby and these people don't get a baby to take home? That's gross. So I had a quasi bad outcome last Wednesday. So we're doing breech deliveries again. So I counseled her the way, and I always say to people, I practice the way I would practice on my own wife. I gave her the choices. There's no good way to be unpregnant. You can have a section. I can do a section right now, or you can labor. She labored. She had a beautiful labor, fairly beautiful delivery, and baby ended up at CHEO. You know, it looks like it's going to be fine, but, you know, you second-guess yourself. It's not the same as, like, some 75-year-old woman who gets admitted with pneumonia. And, of course, everybody wants her to get better and go home, and she has people who love her, but it's not the same level of disaster if, God forbid, something happens to her and she doesn't come home. It's a woman in the ICU at the General last week. After one delivery, it's, you know, pancreatitis, and, you know, I don't know if she made it or not. But pregnancy's a dangerous thing. And so it's sometimes emotionally draining. It's fatigue. There's a lot of fatigue because babies can't tell time. Sometimes lack of respect. Women's health is not as well respected as cataracts and hip surgery. So we are the first ones to get our ORs cut, and first one, you know, we because it's mostly quality of life issues we're dealing with, and not major health issues. Like the cancer gets dealt with, but some poor woman who's an executive who can't sit through a meeting without flooding, has to wait a year for her hysterectomy. Because that's not a life issue, it's a quality of life issue. So that kind of stuff is annoying. Yeah?
Can you comment on the plus one on the screen?
Yeah, so we have right now in Ottawa we don't have a plus one, we have a plus 4 months. But there are programs where you can do an extra year after family medicine. Here in Ottawa, I'm not training people to do sections, but I'm training them to be at least more comfortable with repairs, with difficult repairs, with vacuums, forceps, so that they can hopefully be more confident to work independently.
So how essential is it, for example?
I don't think it's essential. It depends on your experience during residency. So, some family medicine residents get a great experience. They do lots of deliveries. They are in the right place at the right time, get to see some shoulder dystocias, good mentorship from another family doc who lets them do vacuums and things like that so they can practice afterwards. It's not mandatory. Just most of the people I'm interviewing are saying they're just looking for a little bit more comfort, a little bit extra experience. So I've put together a 4-month program. Yeah.
A lot of the young graduated physicians who want to do OB and family were saying they're having difficulty getting hospital privileges by the OB department. Have you seen that, or what's?
Yeah, not my thing. I think that I'm surprised to hear that that's a problem. You'd think that it wouldn't be coming from OB and not wanting people there. It's just a matter of making sure people are credentialed and. The hospital may not want, they just don't want to take up more resources. Yeah, if the current family doctors want to just split the pot with another person, that's split the resources with one extra person. But low risk obstetrics is not a high priority for a tertiary care hospital.
You said that you were in the OR 4 times a month.
Right.
How many times are you on call?
I'm on call 2.5, the equivalent of 2.5 24-hour shifts a month, because I have 12 partners in my group.
And the rest of the time you have shifts in the OR that are not part of your on-call shift.
Correct.
So you're in the OR and you have clinic time.
Yeah.
As well.
So my structure is, so Monday morning I have colposcopy and I supervise the resident gynecology clinic. Tuesday, I'm either in my office seeing pregnant women, or I'm in the OR, alternating weeks. Wednesday, I'm either off, or I'm on call. Thursday, I'm either post-call, or I'm in the office doing gynae. And Friday, I'm either in the office doing gynae, or I'm off. That's what a typical week.
No, I mean, like
typical of anybody? Yeah, typically we do 1 day a week of OB. Some people mix their OB and their gynae. I used to mix my OB and my gynae. Now I pay my own nurse, so I only need a nurse for OB, so I pay her for my OB days, but not for my gynae days. So I typically have a full day of OB, a full day of gynae, a half day of colposcopy, and a half day on average in the OR, and then on average a half day on call or a day on call. Yeah, it depends on your interest. You know, I have partners who do peds and adolescent gynae, so they don't do, well, I mean, they might do colposcopy, and they don't do as much OB. They'll do a peds adolescent gynae clinic. They'll do this, that, and the other clinic, contraception clinic, or they have different interests. That's a typical week. I probably don't work as hard as others because I have academic time to be program director.
And if you were to do something like Would you still kind of do those things at half day, in the OR, full day?
So the REI guys probably in the, you know, they probably have a day or two in the clinic seeing patients, a day in egg retrieval. And embryo transfers, a day in the OR, or you know, a day every couple weeks in the OR for, you know, doing fertility surgeries. And call is not as much. They wouldn't need a post-call day off because they're not doing obstetrics call. So, yeah.
What's the call schedule in residency?
Pretty much we're at roughly 6 calls a month. For the juniors, 4 calls a month for the seniors, 1 or 2 for the chiefs. And those are 24-hour shifts, so if 24-hour shifts go away, that'll be modified. We're doing 12-hour weekends right now.
Can you talk a bit more about sort of the difference between a family doc that does the plus one and OBS guy,
There's not a lot of family docs doing it. So not a lot of family docs do sections. So you would have to consult the obstetrician on call if your patient needed a section. And it's to their own comfort level whether they do forceps or vacuums. I'll get consulted from even a good family doc who does vacuums for a challenging vacuum or a forceps. They won't take care of as sick people. So as soon as they have any kind of medical problems, and there may not be as low risk, they'll refer them to us. Twins. So, in my opinion, all the fun stuff. Family docs just do the... But that's my interpretation of the fun stuff, right? So, family doc might say, well, the only thing that's fun about obstetrics is the easy deliveries and the multips who are, you know, just going to come in and spit out a baby. If that's all I did all day, every day, I'd get bored. So, take-home message is, there's something for everyone in medicine. Figured out what it was for me. And because, like I said, there wasn't much else that I liked. I like single system... If you like young, healthy women with single system disease, and surgery, but not only surgery, then... OBS-GYN is for you.